Welcome to Great Women in Fraud with Kelly Paxton, certified fraud examiner, private investigator, and pink collar crime expert. This is the podcast where thought leaders in fraud share their stories, wisdom, resources, and tips. For 25 years, I have worked in fraud and investigations in both the government and private sector. I love what I do, and I want to share with others who are also either working in fraud or interested in fraud as a career. This is where you will learn how to investigate but not commit fraud. What are the chances of having two great women in fraud in Bend, Oregon? Well, pretty good. Melissa Goddard, who is a CFE, and I both live and work in Bend, Oregon. Apparently, Bend is a Zoom working hotspot, but we knew how awesome Bend was a long time ago. We were ahead of the curve, as many great women in fraud are. Melissa's first job was in construction at age 15. She has seen a lot. Hear about how two families were deeply affected by an embezzlement. Heartbreaking for everyone, including Melissa. Take a listen to Melissa's story and see how you can be inspired by her own fraud journey. She is a solopreneur who specializes in construction fraud, but any fraud is exciting. Let's get going. We are here today, and even though we're on Zoom, I have had the pleasure of meeting Melissa Goddard in person in Bend, Oregon, about 2 years ago, and we haven't met since because of COVID, but and the reason I met Melissa was I used LinkedIn like I always do, and I put CFE Bend, Oregon, and you were the first person to pop up. I reached out to you, and we have been in contact ever since. So, Melissa, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and the type of, you know, fraud work that you get to do?
So my main business is focused on construction. I do a lot of construction fraud and construction auditing. I also do a lot of construction training for contractors, owners, and people in the construction industry as far as preventing fraud. So I do a lot of seminars. I'm one of the trainers for the contractors board. So I do some fraud training for contractors, and they actually get contractors board credit for taking my courses, which is fantastic because it gives them a reason to be there. So I do a lot of that work. I also do other fraud examinations. I like to do different things, but I focus most of my business on construction fraud.
Well, and Bend, one of the most beautiful places in the United States, is growing. And they say it's like a Zoom town because there's so many people. It's like, if you're going to be working on Zoom, why don't do it where, you know, you can ski or hike or whatever. And so you get a lot of people that get to spread the word easier.
I do. It's absolutely beautiful here. And so being in Bend, everything here is growing like crazy. So we're able to spread the word here, which a lot of the contractors here don't get the same benefit as contractors in bigger cities like Portland, those kind of markets. So being here in Bend and being able to go out and talk to contractors here, they're finally getting the same benefit as those bigger contractors or contractors in bigger cities.
Right. And we were saying before we hit recording is that, you know, I mean, COVID has obviously decimated lots of things. And then other things have gone really, really well. Construction, like I said, in Bend is growing. And then we have the ACFE that has come out. And, you know, there's been three reports about how fraud is going to be increasing during COVID and post-COVID. What are your thoughts about fraud and COVID, specifically in the construction area?
I think it kind of depends. I think that there will be an increase. It'll be interesting to see where those increases are. I can say that I have seen an increase in one area already, which is kind of interesting. So in the minority business certification area, I've already had three calls about minority business, woman-owned business certifications that were fraudulently getting business, saying they were a minority or a woman-owned business when they really weren't. And I had not had a call before COVID hit. So this is kind of a new area, at least for me. So this specific area seems to be ramping up. Now, whether that's related directly to COVID or if that's because there's more of a focus of people or more of a focus of government giving work to minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses and set aside funds for those businesses, I'm not sure. But that definitely is an area where I all of a sudden am getting calls on those specific type of frauds.
That's interesting because I saw a kind of a big one of those happening in Portland, but then I also saw another one happening outside of Bend that made the newspaper. So, and I hadn't thought of that. I've considered doing, you know, a woman-owned business. I just haven't gotten to it, but that's an area of fraud I haven't really thought about, but I've seen it in the news. So interesting to follow on that.
Yes, yes. And I'm a woman-owned business. And so there's a lot of certification steps you have to take. And so for somebody to actually go through and say that they're certified, and this is in the construction world, and, you know, to get all the way through those, all the way through, you know, the process, and nobody ever verified that they were actually a woman-owned business or a minority-owned business or veteran-owned, is concerning. But for somebody to actually say that they were certified, and that is interesting that we're starting to see a ramp up in that area.
Yeah, yeah. So how did you get, can you tell me your first fraud case? Do you remember your first fraud case ever?
I actually do. So I was lucky enough when I was first taking my master's program, I was lucky enough that a regional CPA firm in Tucson, Arizona took a chance on me and they hired me because I was so excited about fraud. And they had a consulting portion of their CPA firm. And so I was actually working in the audit department at the time. They sent me out on audit and I was doing the SAS 99 questions with the internal auditor. And she was giving me some strange answers. So we were talking about the one section of the business. I don't want to go into too much detail. So she was talking about, or we were auditing one section of the business. And she kept saying every time I asked her a question, so you're talking about this main part of the business, right? And I was like, yes, but it's very odd that she kept pointing me to that. And so when I got done with the questions with the internal auditor, I called my boss and I said, I think something is going on. And I'm brand new at the whole fraud. I just started my master's in fraud. And he's like, what makes you say that? And so I told him and I said, I just have this feeling. Something is off. Something is not right. And so he said, okay, well, I'll call over there and see what's going on. See if, you know, I'll talk to the CFO. And they had a long-standing relationship. He said, I'll see what I can find out. He called over to the CFO and the CFO told him that they suspected one division of the business had an issue, which they did. And so that was, when he found out that, you know, there was a fraud issue, he pulled me off of the audit and I got to do the entire fraud case all the way through, you know, presenting everything to the police. Everything. It was so much fun. I was in on the interrogation part of it. I mean, he walked me through the entire case. It was the greatest feeling. The interrogation part was eye-opening because it was a little old man that I had to interrogate. So that was hard on me because I had never been through that. But it was a great first experience.
That's so funny. You guys can't see Melissa right now, but like, you know, her eyes are lit up. She's animated because this is what people think of fraud. And you remember that sort of first case or like, I mean, I remember my first case and then you get the bug. And would you say that you had the bug ever since?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah.
The fraud bug. How terrible is that? Once you get it, you can't, there is no antibiotic, there is no vaccination for it or anything. Once you get it, you kind of keep with it. So, or at least the people that I'm around, because it just seems like everyone loves to talk about it. Even I was on a call earlier this morning with a CPA in Canada, and immediately he had looked at my stuff, and it turns out that his sister-in-law had embezzled and went to prison for stealing money. And he's just like, this is such a crime that, you know, affects everyone. Mm-hmm. And fraud does really affect everyone.
It does.
And I was listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast last week with Jim Lehrer, who's an amazing coach. And I always tell my clients, and you can, you know, we'll talk about this, but go back to the business, sell more houses, build more houses, sell more widgets. You can replace the money. You can't replace the time. But then I was listening to Jim Lehrer, and I kind of think there's an even this is even stronger. It's the energy of fraud from when you are a victim that can really make your experience so horrific, because it's the time sink, but in it, it's the bad juju energy. I mean, can you talk about any of your victims who went through this and, you know, not maybe physically crying on your shoulder, but the amount of hand holding that has gone on that you've done?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a case that I worked on, and this was a construction case, and a woman, not only defrauded her husband's best friend, but she defrauded her husband. So she had decided, she did the books for both her husband's business as well as her husband's best friend's business. And she had decided that she was going to leave her husband. And so she started embezzling from both businesses. And the realization from both sides, you know, the husband's best friend, the husband's best friend's wife, which was her best friend, and the husband, and these people did everything together. I mean, they were best friends. And so, you know, they did all of their trips together and everything. And just, you know, walking these people through what happened and how it happened and just seeing the devastation that it caused, was, it gave me nightmares. There were many, many tears that I shed with them. And as a fraud examiner, you know, you're trying not to take a side. You're trying to be as much as you can. But when you are dealing with people that are that heartbroken over a fraud, you can't help but be a human. You can't help it. You can't help but walk through that pain with them. And you're the one presenting these facts to them. And, you know, they are facts, but they also are human facts. And they affect real people in real time. And you can't help but be a human about it. And it's horrific to see the real pain and the real hurt that it causes. And these are long-term pains that they cause. And even on the, you know, even on the business side, if you're a business owner and it's somebody that you worked with for 20 years, that causes real pain. And it's not just money. Money can be replaced. That trust and the real pain that you feel inside, nobody can get, you just don't get over that the next day.
No, I mean, fraud has real consequences. And, you know, I've just finished my book. Be sure and get it. Embezzlement, How to Prevent or Detect, Prevent and Investigate Pink Collar Crime. But that's the thing is, people have optimism bias, which means it won't happen to us. Mm-hmm. I'll teach a course and, you know, I'll say, you know, fraud's going to happen. And everyone in the course is going to say, oh, it's going to happen to him or it's going to happen to her. It won't happen to me because I'm so smart. I'm so successful. And we do that because it motivates us. It gets us out of bed in the morning to think positively about the world. But fraud does happen, and it happens in any industry, in any geography. You know, it's, and at the end of the day, you can replace the money, but you, the lost time, the energy, that's kind of like my word going forward this year is, what does fraud do to the energy of a person, the business owner, the business, the coworkers? I mean, you and I know, and we won't mention what it is. There's a sort of municipality like business in our area that was ripped off, and the woman who allegedly committed it committed suicide. And so how did that affect not only the consumers of this municipality, like how did it affect her coworkers? How did it affect management? Like, and the reputation of the business and industry, it's so much more than just the actual act of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, from the construction industry side of it, I worked in construction since my first job was in construction, you know, as a 15-year-old after school job. I was lucky enough to work in a construction office. And so since then, all I've heard is, oh, this is the way construction is. You're never going to change this industry. You have these rough, tough guys and they do their thing and they're not always straight up, honest, whatever. And there are some bad guys in construction. We all know this. However, there are some absolutely amazing guys who are straightforward. They want to do things right. They want to change the way people look at the construction industry. And so my goal, and one of the things that in my training that I really want to change, is the way people look at, this is not going to happen to me. This can't happen to our company. This can't happen to our employees. This can't happen to us. Because I think if you change that perspective in the construction industry, if you change that, this is the way the construction industry does things, or this is the way the construction industry is, and you start looking at, we can change this, and this can happen to us in our business, if you really change that perspective, then we can really make a difference and stop some of this fraud and stop, you know, this from happening in the construction industry as much as it happens, especially with the corruption and bid rigging and those kind of really big things that happen in the construction industry that the construction industry is known for. We can make a huge difference if we can really change those perspectives of, this can't happen to us, or this can't happen in our business. If we can start at the top and really trickle that down to the employees and to suppliers and really make them see that this can happen to your business, all it takes is one employee that you hire that has this different, you know, wheeler dealer attitude, or they're under the right amount of pressure, all it takes is one, then we can really start making a difference.
Well, that is great, because my whole thing, most people think pink collar crime is women committing any type of crime, which it's position, not gender, it's garden variety embezzlement, is I want to change the bias or the stereotypes of a criminal. Like, you know, we say bad guys. Like, come on. It's offensive to guys. There are women that commit crimes. And again, I want people to understand that honest people steal. Do you have an example of someone that maybe committed crimes that was a good, decent person and made a bad choice? Do you have some examples like that?
Yeah, I mean, the one that sticks out to me, and this one kind of blew me away. And so I had an older lady that she worked at a plumbing business for 20 some years. sweetest lady, Kelly, that you would ever meet in your entire life. Little old lady. She baked cookies every single day. I mean, she was just the sweetest thing. And I was in there and just working on an audit, started noticing some weird stuff. And I was like, this doesn't, and it's in payroll, right? And she did all of the books and everything. And I was like, this just doesn't make any sense. There was extra payroll to her. And I asked her boss about it. And he's like, no, we didn't pay her anything extra. And I was like, yeah, you did. And he's like, no, we didn't. And I was like, but these checks say you did. And he's like, no. And I was like, okay. So I pulled all the information together and I showed him. And he was like, floored. And she ended up over about 10 years had stolen like $300,000.
Yikes.
And she literally wrote herself extra checks and he signed them. She would give him stacks of checks, you know, for everybody. And he just flipped through them and signed them. He didn't actually look at any of the checks, you know. He just assumed that what she was giving him was correct and signed away and off they went. So she was giving herself extra checks. And so this is a bad choice on her part, but she was sweetest lady ever. When we questioned her about this, she honestly felt like she was owed the extra money. So in the evenings, she would take the phone calls for the plumbing business, like the emergency calls, and route them out to whoever was on call. So she felt she was owed the extra pay because she was actually doing the answering machine or answering service stuff that he would normally have to pay somebody else for. So she felt like she was owed the money, but he wouldn't pay her for it. So she paid herself.
Yeah, that goes to the rationalization part of the fraud triangle, we know.
Absolutely. But I mean, she wasn't a bad person. She made a really bad choice, but not a bad person. She was the sweetest thing you would ever ask. I mean, she was absolutely the sweetest thing ever. She made a really bad choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maybe at one point she even asked the guy like, hey, I'm taking these calls. Can I maybe get a bonus for it or something like that? And there is a case where someone said that he asked for like a raise and the boss is like, no. And they ended up just giving themselves a raise for years. And it ended up being in like hundreds of thousands of dollars. And he's like, I'm doing the work. The boss says we can't afford it. And he knew he could afford it. And so he just gave himself the raise.
Yep. And she said that she had asked several times to be paid for it. And that she even went out and maybe she did her homework. So she went out and found out how much it would cost for an answering service to take these calls. So she did her research and presented it to him. So this is what you would be paying. And he still said no.
And he still wanted her to do the work.
Mm-hmm. And so she justified in paying herself and, you know, so not a bad person. She should have just hired an answering service, but instead she paid herself for it. So, I mean, these are the rationalization and not a bad person, but made a really bad choice.
Yeah, exactly. So now you live in Bend and now I live in Bend.
Yes.
And Bend's about, you know, they say 105,000 people. And, you know, it's not a metropolis yet. You've been able to make a living doing this type of work. So what would you say to someone that lives in a smaller sort of community, maybe that doesn't have the resources? You've been able to still get training. Give us some sort of advice as to how you've been able to build a thriving business in, you know, not a thriving economy, but not somewhere where you're kind of like, you would think that there would be fraud and enough work for you to support your business.
So I have both the construction fraud and construction audit part of my business. So I do work both here and in Portland. So I do both. And I also team with some great people in construction auditing. So I'm extremely lucky. So when my workflow is a little bit slow, I have teaming partners that I can reach out to and say, hey, do you have anything I can help you with? I have fantastic people in the construction audit industry that have mentored me and really are fantastic in assisting me with workflow. And so my suggestion to people is, you know, networking, making sure you're reaching out to people, because sometimes even if you're working in construction or in fraud, or even in auditing, if you are slow, somebody else might be overwhelmed and they may be able to, you know, give you part of a case or, you know, help you with your workflow. So network, teaming, especially the small business, if you're in a small area, make sure you're reaching out. And I always do all of my calls to, you know, lawyers and owners and all of that. Do them over the phone or, you know, Zoom calls, whatever, but do them personally. I think the personal touch makes a big difference, especially in a small community. It makes all the difference. So when you're in a big city, it may not make such a big difference. But when you're in a small community, reaching out to people, before COVID, I would go into people's offices and just introduce myself. Of course, we can't do that now that we're in COVID, but I still make phone calls to people personally. So yeah, it makes a big difference, that in-person contact, when you're in a small community.
Well, and I think I connected you with Nicole Landau, who I've had on the podcast. And
she's amazing.
Yeah. And I got connected to her through Dan Rainey. But one of the consistent themes of Great Women in Fraud is that, like, network. And it's not to get stuff. It's to give stuff. It's, you know, it's a two-way street. And the whole personal touch in the small community, I think you definitely emulate that.
Absolutely. And me and Nicole have talked about working together on projects and that kind of thing, because that same thing, we're both in kind of small communities. And so if we can work together on projects, if she has something that she can give me and vice versa, that will help both of us out. So I think it definitely works wonderful if you're networking with people.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is kind of one of my wrap up type of questions. What would you tell your 18-year-old self, and if you wanted to get into the fraud world or you had any interest in it, what is like a nugget you would give your 18-year-old self?
Persistence. Go out there, and no matter what anybody tells you, go for it. It's not always easy, but be persistent and enjoy every minute of it, because working in the fraud industry is absolutely amazing. And enjoy the ride. It is absolutely amazing. The people that you meet, you know, other people in the fraud industry are absolutely amazing. I love hearing the stories. Networking with people is absolutely incredible. So, you know, I don't know about other industries as much, but I know in the fraud industry, networking with people, we all rely on each other so much, and we share stories and we help each other out. And I just love the way that we are such a community of people that are there for each other. So I think that the networking and the community, and just enjoy every moment of that.
Yeah. And this is a funny story. I was coming home from a gig, and I'm sitting next to a guy on a flight, and, you know, we get to talking because I'm chit chatting. And it turns out that he knew Melissa. And because I said, oh yeah, I speak on fraud. And he's like, wait, fraud? I know someone who does fraud work. And it turns out, do you remember that he works at Les Schwab? And oh my God, he was hysterical because he had a couple of cocktails on this flight. And, he spoke so highly of you. And it's like, this is a really small world. If you say the word fraud, people are going to go, Oof. It's just like there's such intrigue, but it is a really small knit world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he gave you a huge, huge, like, you know, he also said, if I ever needed really good tile work, to ask your husband, by the way.
Oh, yes. 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 Husband does tile work and stone work. So,
yeah, that's it. It's just a small, small world. The last question I always ask is, and I don't know if you've even been on the Google machine today, but what is the last thing you Googled before this podcast?
I was actually looking up Nevada modified business tax.
Oh, okay.
So maybe construction audit that I'm working on. So,
okay. So it was work related.
It was work related. Yes. Yeah.
That is great. The Google machine, work related. So I cannot thank you enough, Melissa, for coming on Great Women in Fraud. I can't wait till we can actually get out and see each other in beautiful Bend, Oregon. Maybe it's going to have to be a food cart outside. But again, I just want to thank you because I've seen you grow your business and I'm honored to be a colleague of yours.
I am so thankful to be on your podcast, Kelly, and so thankful that you reached out that first time on LinkedIn. I think of you as a mentor, and I absolutely am thrilled to be on here with you and to follow everything that you're doing. And I can't wait to get your new book. So I'm going to be jumping on LinkedIn right now so that I can go out and get your new book, and can't wait to go out and have lunch with you and catch up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What a small fraud world we Great Women in Fraud live in. Again, like Melissa said, the network for you is so incredibly important. Reach out. Fraud is in every industry. I love that Melissa is trying to break the stereotype of the construction industry by both education and her work. Doing training is so important. And the story about the nicest lady who baked cookies almost every day? Remember, hashtag niceness is not an internal control. Be sure and rate the podcast and subscribe. It gets the word out to other fraud professionals. And remember, sharing is caring. Thank you for your time. Here's to 2021. This has been another episode of Great Women in Fraud with Kelly Paxton. If you have feedback on today's episode or would like to be a guest or have someone you think we should interview, please tweet us at Great Women in Fraud or email kelly@greatwomeninfraud.com. We'd love to hear from you. Join us again next time for more amazing guest stories and tips. While you're at it, if you found value in the show, it would be great if you left a rating on iTunes. Or please tell a friend about the show. Your time is valuable, and I appreciate it. Thank you for listening.